This is episode number 95 with Regional Operations Manager at Uber, Josh Kennedy.
Welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. My name is Kirill Eremenko, data science coach and lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you inspiring people and ideas to help you build your successful career in data science. Thanks for being here today, and now let's make the complex simple.
Welcome everybody back to the Super Data Science Podcast. Today we've got something exciting. A couple of months ago, we had a giveaway at Super Data Science. It was called the Super Data Science Skills Booster Giveaway. And if you were with us at the time, you may remember we sent out an invitation and you need to go to this page on our website and then just perform certain actions like liking a post or leaving a comment here and there, and you would get entries into this giveaway to win a prize. And the prize was your choice of three conferences about data science that you could go to. And the conferences were the Strata Data Science Conference in New York in September, the Tableau Conference in Las Vegas in October, and the Open Data Science Conference West in San Francisco in November. And today we have the person who won this giveaway. So Josh Kennedy is our winner, and he lives in California, and he works for Uber. So we chatted with Josh about his aspirations, about how he is, his goal is to become a data scientist in the next year or two, and what he's doing in the direction of that goal, what he's learning, how he's going about it. And also towards the end of the podcast, we talked about some other interesting things like entrepreneurship, ideas, execution, getting things done, and stuff like that. So quite an interesting chat. I can't wait for you to check it out. And without further ado, I bring to you Regional Operations Manager at Uber, Josh Kennedy. Welcome everybody to the Super Data Science Podcast. Today I've got an exciting guest, Josh Kennedy from Uber on the show. Josh, how are you going?
Hey, Carol, it's great. Thanks for having me on.
And first off, congratulations. You won the Super Data Science giveaway. We were giving away a free ticket to a conference of your choice. And yeah, tell us a bit more about that. Are you, were you excited when you found out you won?
Yeah, I was incredibly excited. I don't know if I've ever won any sort of giveaway before, not that I can remember. And huge Tableau user. I'm actually from Vegas, so I'll have somewhere to stay while I'm there. So excited about that.
You're going to the Tableau conference. You chose that one.
Yeah, the Tableau conference in Vegas.
That's awesome. Awesome. And how did you find out about the giveaway?
I think I'm on your mailing list because I've taken several of your Udemy courses.
Yeah.
And it came through in email.
And then you were like, oh, I might as well, you know, try my luck. Just click a few buttons. Yeah. How many entries did you do? You told me.
Yeah, I did. I think I did two. Like one of them was send an email or subscribe to email, which I think I was already subscribed to. And the other one was visit your Facebook.
Yeah. So you just like, why didn't you do more actions? You would have gotten more chances to win.
Well, usually they're focused around like Twitter or Instagram or some sort of sharing, and I never have those logged in.
Yeah. So it was just what was easier at the time. And then you won. That's so cool, man. Congrats. Very excited for you.
Thank you.
The conference, when's it going? Is it October?
It's October 7th. Yeah. I already booked my flight.
Okay, cool. So maybe even when this podcast goes live, you might be already at the conference. Very interesting. I'm sure it's going to go well. I heard they have very interesting shows going on there. It's like a huge community and lots of fun. So it'll be fun. It'll be good.
Yeah, it seems like the Tableau community in general is pretty fun too. I'm excited to be around that.
Yeah, you like Tableau, right? You told me.
Yeah, huge Tableau user. It's just a fun software to use.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. And we'll talk more about that. But tell us what you do, Josh. You work at Uber, right?
Yeah, I'm currently in the operations org for Uber. Mm-hmm. I sit in San Francisco right now, but I work in a team that's based in LA.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gotcha. And you do you're an operations, regional operations manager.
Yeah, so that means I work in the operations org, but I do a lot of heavy like data analysis tasks, business process development, dashboarding, basically anything and everything that we can use data for to influence like our operations work.
Yeah, that's really cool. And yeah, so tell us a bit about your background. Like, you originally are not from California, right? You're from Las Vegas, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in Las Vegas. Actually, I have a pretty interesting like development of like where I came from.
Yeah.
So I'll go through the whole thing. Growing up in Vegas, yeah. I was actually, when I was young, about 16 or 17, I was a professional magician.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. I've never met a professional magician on the podcast. That's so cool. Yes. Keep going.
Yes.
This is so cool.
So I was doing that for a couple of years, and I was also really into music. Mm. I had gone to a music high school. So right out of high school, I went to music college.
Yep.
Not really the traditional path for somebody who gets into like data analysis.
And for magicians especially, they usually go to
Hogwarts.
That's so cool. Okay, yeah. Music high school. What instrument?
Yeah, so I play saxophone and guitar.
Mm.
I went to college then for sax for a little bit, but I quickly learned a lot about finance in my free time, just basically calculating what my student loan payments would have been if I had gone through my entire degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I had always been interested in finance, so I switched my major very quickly to a finance degree at a non-music college.
Yep.
And that's kind of where I started at. All throughout college, I worked for Apple. I was in like a B2B sales job where I was selling like iPads and iPhones to the casinos in Vegas.
Nice.
Yeah, and then one of the casinos recruited me out of college, and right out of college, I went into an FP&A position, so like financial planning, where I was at Caesars Entertainment. So they own like Caesars Palace, Bally's, Flamingo, etc.
Yeah, it's like one of the biggest companies there.
Yeah, it is the biggest. It's international as well. They have like almost 40 properties.
Yeah, how did they get onto you? Like, was it through some university? I don't know, Open Day or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I went to University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the schools that they recruit out of.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. So just went to like a networking event with the folks from Caesars and met like I happened to have just been chatting with, I didn't know it at the time, he was the senior vice president of finance.
Wow.
If I had known that, I probably would have been a little bit more shy, but
yeah.
Got along really well with him and kind of like set up an interview before I had even left the networking event.
Nice, very nice. Okay, and so you were studying and working at Caesars, and then what happened?
Yeah, studying, working at Caesars. While I was there, I was really happy. I liked my job a lot, but Uber reached out to me on LinkedIn, and you know, Uber is one of these companies. It's like a unicorn. You know what they say? Like,
you don't say no.
Yeah, you don't pass up an opportunity like that. And I truthfully thought, I was like, I'm not qualified for this, but like, what the heck? If they want to interview me, I'll let them interview me.
Yeah.
And turns out I got it.
Was the interview process long? Because I hear it's like 7 interviews with Uber.
Yeah, it was incredibly long. It was about 2 months.
2 months. Wow.
Yeah. I was first interviewing for an operations position in Vegas.
Yeah.
And the management team for Vegas was based in Phoenix at the time. So they flew me out to Phoenix. I interviewed with the whole team. And then they're like, oh, actually, how'd you like to work in LA? And I was like, I'm okay with LA. And then I interviewed with the entire team in LA as well.
Mm. Wow, that's crazy.
And eventually moved to LA.
Yeah. For that. And they also give you a test at the start, right? Like you have to, it's a timed test where you have to solve some problems. Is that still the case?
Yeah, it's a pretty famous like analytics test that people like to talk about.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything you can share from there that's not going to jeopardize, you know, the test for other people who are going to take it?
For sure. Yeah. It's, if you're well versed in Excel, you'll do pretty well. It's all Excel based. They give you like a sample data set that needs to be cleaned up. And then they give you like 20 or 30 questions that you need to answer with that data set.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have a lot of like, build a visualization off of this data and tell a story kind of question. So they also want to see that you can storytell with data and create slides.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gotcha. That's and that's for an operations manager position. I think it might be a bit different scenario for different positions because you have like marketing and stuff like that, social people as well.
Yeah, for most of the operations org, I think it's the same test. But then when you get into like data science, it's of course a lot more intensive.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And so now you passed those interviews, and then you went to work at Uber.
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha. And you're an operations manager right now. And what is you shared with me before the podcast, your goal for the next year or two?
Yeah. So I've slowly been building up my kind of analytics toolbox, and I really would love to become a data scientist within the next year or two. Mm-hmm. I work very heavily right now in like SQL and R, and I think I have a lot of the tool set already down. I'm just trying to like hammer down those final like gaps in my experience.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. And so as we can all imagine, like Uber is an interesting company from a data scientist perspective, because it's all about data, right? They don't actually have the assets. They don't own the cars. They don't, the drivers are like, as far as I remember, they're like not direct employees of Uber. They're contractors or something like that. And so the company wouldn't exist without the data. Would you say that's a fair statement?
Absolutely. It's completely data-driven company.
Yeah, exactly. And so what would you say is like the most exciting and interesting part about Uber and its data?
For me, it's probably the fact that executives are bought in on the data point of it. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of companies, like I used to work for Caesars, they're a Fortune 500 company. They've been around for like 60 years. Uh-huh. And they don't have like a strong data-driven culture. Mm-hmm. So a lot of executives would make decisions just based on their hunch or based on their experience. Versus Uber, like data really drives all the decisions that we make. Mm-hmm. So even if you're like a lowly, you know, data analyst, if you find something incredible in the data, you could probably pitch it to somebody high up and turn it into like a business outcome.
Yep. Gotcha.
So that's really exciting.
Yeah, totally. And do you think like more companies should adopt that approach?
I think absolutely. I think we're seeing that, you know, with tools like Tableau that are more user-friendly and easier to deploy dashboarding like across your entire company. Like we're seeing the industry go that way, but I definitely think like any major company nowadays should be using data.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it's just a world we live in. There's so much data all over the place and everybody's generating it. You got to be conscious of that. And I wanted to ask you as well, you work both at Apple and at Uber. You know, like not many people get the opportunity to do both. What, like from your experience, I understand this is not going to be like a generalized comparison, but from your experience, what do you think, you know, which of these companies is more attuned to their data?
So my experience at Apple didn't really give me a good enough insight to say that like it's less tuned than Uber. Mm. Just because I was in like the retail organization doing like, you know, sales directly. Okay. I wasn't working in data directly. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Apple is, you know, like objectively the most valuable company in the world, right? Mm-hmm. They have, you know, the best products. They're you know, incredible on all fronts. So yeah. I definitely wouldn't make the assumption that they're not very data driven as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So but basically leading companies in that space, and it's good that they're in separate markets, right? They're not really competing with each other. So there's no problem there.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha.
Exactly.
Okay, that's pretty cool. And so Uber and data, like probably a lot of listeners are wondering this, and it'd be unfair of me not to ask you this question. Just wanted to ask you about the culture at Uber. So we've been hearing lots of stories on the news and stuff like that. How do you feel about the culture at Uber right now? And, you know, is it something that you're enjoying? How's the work going there?
Yeah, I honestly can't really say too much into what the accusations have been. What I can say is that my personal experience has been nothing less than phenomenal. I've been there for almost a year and a half. Like I personally never saw any of the issues that people say in the news. Yeah. I'm really excited about our new CEO, Dara. Mm-hmm. Like, he's incredibly down to earth, incredibly smart and outgoing. Like he in his first public address, like to our company, I think I can speak for everybody and say like, we're all extremely confident in the future under him. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably the best time to be at this company right now, because if there were problems with the culture, like, we've pretty much tackled a lot of it, and it's a really great place to work right now.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Very excited for you, man. That's good to hear. It's always important to be confident in the place where you work and where everything's going. So I wanted to move on a little bit to how you're growing, because obviously you've achieved quite a lot in life already. You've jumped from magician to music to finance and now Uber. But you have goals and ambitions, and you want to become like a data scientist, as you say, in the next couple of years. What exactly are you studying? You've mentioned a couple of softwares. What are you studying, and how are you going about it?
So right now, one thing I've tried to do, so in the past 6 months, I challenged myself to learn R. Mm-hmm. And the way that I did that was I essentially told myself, anything that you're thinking of doing in like SQL, just try and do that in R first. Mm. So I got rather good at data manipulation, not so much like scripting and writing functions, but I got really good at data manipulation first. Yep. So now I'm trying to turn that into like writing functions in scripting side. One area where I know that I kind of lack the next level skills to become a data scientist is my actual statistics knowledge. So I actually purchased one of your courses, the business statistics one you have.
Oh, cool. Thanks. That's so cool. Yeah. That's a recent one.
Yeah. So that one, I've been going through it. Just, I try and set time every single morning. I wake up pretty early at about 6 a.m. And like try and get at least 1 to 2 hours of studying or like personal development time in the mornings before I go to work.
That's really cool. So what do you think of the statistics course so far?
So far, it's great. Yeah. You know, it's the thing is, like, I know I'm decent at statistics. Like, I remember like pretty much everything that I went through in university, but it's just applying it to a practical environment is where I need to like really hone in.
Yeah.
So for me, the challenge is translating it from like an academic environment to a practical environment.
Yeah. And I figure that's usually the case, especially, you know, for me, because I also studied statistics at university. I studied at high school and then I studied university. And like, I remember it and then I forget it. Like literally a year later, I don't even remember what a p-value is. And then I figured that if you embed those exercises, if you go through those practical exercises that show you what it's like, at least that'll give you a bigger something to kind of remember in the future. Oh yeah, that's how I applied the p-value to this business problem, and it'll help it anchor in your memory. And that's why this course is actually, as you've noticed, probably has a few like after every section, there's an actual practical exercise on how to apply it in a business sense, and hopefully that helps reiterate the knowledge.
Yeah, it definitely does. It's for me, if I can narrow down what's challenging, it's like, if you have a normal distribution in your data, like great, like a lot of the stuff you learned applies perfectly. But it's when you have real life data that's not normally distributed, that's messy, that doesn't give you sample sizes for A/B tests, like stuff like that, is when when it gets challenging.
Exactly. What you need to do then? Okay, yeah, gotcha. And so, did you study R because they use it at Uber, or is it something that you're just doing for yourself?
I started with both R and Python, and I didn't know which. I knew that those were the two languages that like you should know as a data scientist.
Yeah.
And R clicked a little more quickly for me, so that's kind of the one I went running with. Mm-hmm. I still don't know Python. Mm-hmm. That's probably something that down the road I'd like to get more comfortable at, because I know you should know both, like at least to some degree.
Yep.
And then yes, it did help a lot of my coworkers. Use R, so like I had a lot of example code I could go through to do it, and we have like tools built already for R that like integrate with our databases and stuff like that.
That's cool. So, but at the same time, it wasn't compulsory for you to learn R. It was something that you went over and above to in order to, you know, get closer to that goal of yours of becoming a data scientist.
I'd say it was both. So yes, it was absolutely that I wanted to go towards my goal, but I also ran into the problem where sometimes your data sets get too big for, you know, SQL or Excel. So like I was kind of forced as well. But it was like it was a nice push into some.
Yeah, it happened naturally. Gotcha. Okay. What about any other tools? What else are you exploring it in these like SQL? You mentioned statistics and R. Anything else?
Always trying to continue my my SQL skills. I feel very strong in SQL though. SQL. Additionally, like a lot that comes with this is like building a good business foundations as well. Mm-hmm. Like just good, just general good like project management skills. Because you have a lot of people who, in my experience with working with data scientists, is you have a lot of people who are incredibly smart, incredibly academic, incredibly technical, but they don't necessarily have like the project management or like interpersonal communication or like business acumen. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's trying to like be technical and build those technical skills while at the same time remaining like a really strong project manager and storyteller and like have good business acumen.
Yeah, gotcha. And out of curiosity, I'm just wondering here, what made you initially think about data science? Like what is the reason or the factor that's influencing you to be so passionate about this field and wanting to learn more and more? Because as we can already see, like from the things that you're describing, it takes quite a lot of effort to get to the level that Uber requires from a data scientist. So what's your motivator behind this?
Truthfully, like I've always just been pulled to data analysis. It's always been incredibly interesting to me. Like anytime I run into a wall with like not knowing how to do something in R or not knowing how to do something in SQL, that's like the point in which you learn the best. Mm-hmm. when you have to then go searching for an answer. And I just naturally gravitate towards like trying to learn more when I reach those situations. Mm-hmm. And at some point in my development, I just realized, you know, like I'm naturally interested in data analysis and data. Why not just pursue this? And I just went head first and I haven't looked back.
Gotcha. And what's been your biggest challenge, like in your learning journey, in your learning experience, what's been the biggest roadblock or challenge that you had to overcome?
I would say probably working with people who have much stronger like pedigrees than myself. So I went to UNLV, you know, in Vegas. It's not really a top tier school by any means. Yep. And I find myself working every day with people who went to like MIT or Stanford or Harvard's, you know, and it does get, what's the word, intimidating. And for me, one of the challenges has been like talking to these people in a way that they expect like their colleagues to be.
Yep.
So I felt like I've been up leveled from day one just by like working with these types of people, but it's been challenging the whole way.
Yeah, that's a really cool challenge to have. That's awesome. It's like they say that you're the average of the five people that you hang out with most, and probably the, you know, like at the workplace, there's, if everybody around you is like pulling you up and you're aspiring to be like them and learn from them, that's a great thing, right? It's much better than if you're already a level above everybody else and there's nothing for you to learn from other people. So I think that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I've been incredibly lucky to just consistently find myself in those situations.
Yeah,
I think you're exactly right with that.
That's cool. And so you're pretty confident that you don't need to go back to university to become a data scientist, that you can learn through your work experience and you can learn through the resources that you find online. Is that about right?
I really do, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it also helps that I'm in a company where I can kind of like see exactly where I'm trying to go. Mm-hmm. That really helps it, being able to visualize and work with people who are already in that capacity. Mm-hmm. I imagine it would be harder if I were outside of an organization like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Definitely I've learned more from self-training through online resources than I did in university.
All right. So it's pretty interesting that you know where you're headed and where you want to go. Do you think that's aligned with where the whole field of data science is going? Like being at Uber, you would have visibility of lots of different analytics applications and lots of different types of data, like myriads and myriads of data out there. What do you think is going to happen in the world of data, and where is this all going, and is your trajectory aligned with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's something I think a lot about. because if you read into all like the current data science articles and a lot of the new like courses on Udemy that are coming out, I think you even have a couple, they're all seemingly focused around machine learning and like deep learning. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, sort of intimidates me because I know that requires a higher level of technical like expertise to build those kind of things. Mm-hmm. I know there are some packages that you can use in R that make it a little bit easier, but I think that's somewhere where I want to challenge myself to get more involved in that, because I really think that's where like the industry is going. It's something that I have no experience in currently. Yeah. So
next
probably
step.
An area where I need to challenge myself.
Yeah, totally. And that's kind of like the next step. And you mentioned you enjoy working with Tableau. This is something that you do in your free time. Is that right?
Well, it's something I used heavily at Caesars. They mm-hmm. had Tableau server there. Mm-hmm. And I do use it in my free time, but mainly just to go through courses or in a learning capacity. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it's a fun piece of software to use because you get to combine like your visualizations with like Excel logic and also SQL logic at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard for you to pick up Tableau?
I actually thought I learned it pretty easily. A lot of it's drag and drop and pretty intuitive, but I had some courses. I didn't have one of yours back then when I learned Tableau, but I had a similar course. So using something like that makes it a lot easier to learn it. And then of course the biggest factor is having like a reason to use it. Mm-hmm. And I learned it while I was at Caesars. So it was like direct on the job training, like something you can learn, you can apply immediately. And I think that's very valuable to learn anything new.
Would you recommend Tableau as a visualization tool to, you know, people who are looking for one?
Well, I guess it depends how you mean visualization. If you mean like one chart that's very specific, mm-hmm. Probably not. But it's a great dashboarding tool mm-hmm. for like dashboards that you want updated on a recurring basis that you can essentially automate, that you can link directly to a data source and have like beautiful visualizations. It's perfect for that. But like if you're trying to create one chart, like Excel or an R is a little better for that.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And there's another thing I wanted to ask you about. You mentioned that recruiters reached out to you on LinkedIn about Uber. So is that because you were posting something on LinkedIn, or is that because you arranged your profile in some sort of way? Is there any like tips that you can give us in that space?
Yeah, I wasn't posting about anything, but I've always aimed to have a very filled out LinkedIn profile. You know, I think it's really important in this day and age. Like I also partly got my Caesars job because of my LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good opportunity to display like your skills, display like your resume. Like I have a research paper that I did in university posted on there. I know that endorsements aren't so important anymore because like everybody seems to just endorse everybody now, mm-hmm. but I think that they were probably helpful for me back mm-hmm. in the day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I have a few like written recommendations that I got at Apple that I think were probably helpful for me.
Yeah, definitely. It's especially coming from Apple. That's a big one. Yeah. I feel like with recommendations, you need a couple, but you shouldn't overdo it. I once came across this one profile on LinkedIn, a person had like 110 written recommendations.
Jeez.
Yeah. That was crazy. I was like, what is going on there? That's not normal. But yeah, you got to be kind of like very explicit about your experience so people who are looking to fill a role, they can see that you have specifically done those things that they are after, and then they'll get in touch with you.
One other thing, like I think it's also important to be responsive. Mm. So if you are going to use it as a tool to find a position, like when I got that message from Uber about the position, I literally responded back probably within 2 or 3 minutes.
Mm. Well,
you know, maybe that was a bit jumping the gun, but I think that you should aim to have a really high level of responsiveness and like communicate back to recruiters in the same level of language that you know you should be doing so.
Yeah, totally agree. And a similar story for me when I was looking to leave Deloitte, and I was became more active on LinkedIn. I fixed up my profile and so on, and then I was posting stuff, and people would message me sometimes, rarely. But what I was actually doing is I would look at people. I got like a paid profile, and then I could see people who looked at my profile, and I would look at people who looked at my profile, and if they're any at even a little bit interesting to me, like as in they're a manager or there's somebody that could potentially I could potentially get a job from, I would just message them. I'd be like, hey, I noticed you looked at my profile. Is there anything I can help you with? And so one of those people was a recruiter. And I remember he didn't even have a photo on his LinkedIn, but he just looked at mine like briefly. I messaged him, and that was the recruiter that got me the next job. So you don't only need to be like very quick at reacting. You also need to be very quick at being proactive, like every day checking who's looked at your profile and getting in touch with them. Like that's one of the tips that I can give on that space.
Absolutely. And when you're being proactive, I think also like this, like the LinkedIn message to the recruiter is like nowadays cover letter.
Yeah.
Right. So take what you would have done in a cover letter and use that as a message to a recruiter. And
exactly.
That might work.
Exactly. And are there any other like forums or social platforms that you are quite active on? Like maybe the Tableau, do you visit the Tableau user group sometimes?
I used to look at the user, like the user built dashboards, but I'm honestly not very active on those.
Okay. Yeah. Probably like with Uber, it would be taking up a lot of your time. Like I heard working there, it's pretty hectic.
Yeah. It's a lot of hours, but I'm not bored. I never like have the end of the day and say, oh man, I got to work more hours. Like I hate this. Like I've never once said that.
Yeah.
So it's about fine. Like hours are fine if you're passionate about what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's and we're right. Solving like really, really hard, like impactful problems and
yeah.
Happy doing it.
You know what they say about consulting, that consultants on average, they last about 2 years. And that's because they just burn out because they're passionate and excited about what they're doing, but it just like takes up so much of their time and they're still so passionate that like, you know, it's like a fire that's burning super hard, super fast, super, super strong. Like it quickly runs out of resources. So how do you feel about that? Like, do you feel that is a issue for you? That's something that that might happen, or you feel that you have structured your work at Uber in such a way that, you know, you still have time for social life, you still have time for hobbies, and you still have, you still have a life and you won't burn out at some point.
I definitely still have a life. Yeah. I, you know, we work a lot of hours, but it's not so much that it's like destroying my life. Like I honestly did work more hours back at Caesars. Mm-hmm. It was more like an investment banking type like culture there.
Yep.
You know, we would have people working from 8 a.m. till 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. And those like I've never had a day like that at Uber. Like it's been hectic, but it's never been that hectic. But I think what you said about consulting is interesting, and I think I hear that from a lot of consultants. I work with a lot of people who are ex-consultants, and I think there's one key difference though that's important to recognize, and that's like consultants don't necessarily get to see the fruit of their labors.
Mm-hmm.
So they could do all this work to pitch like a solution to a company, and then the company would never implement it. Or mm-hmm. if they do implement it, you're not part of the team that implements it necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a key difference because you might think that your work is impactful, but if it's never actually like being implemented or you're never seeing it like come to life, that's a key piece of like this feedback loop you need at work that you're missing out on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you might be more inclined to get stressed out easier if you're like stuck in this situation where you feel like you're not doing something meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. That's a big one. Yeah, I think I felt the same thing. You kind of like implement something and then it's even like in the news a few months later, but it's like, this company did that, and nobody knows that. Not only nobody knows that your team was part of this process, but you don't even know how they did, like how they finished it off, or how they actually did it. Did they do it right and things like that? So, yeah, it's
or even back at Caesars, we would like we'd work until like midnight or 1 a.m. on a deck that would go to like the CEO of the company, right?
Mm.
Well, sometimes we would build this deck and then it would just get scrapped. And they're like, oh yeah, we decided not to do that.
Mm.
And that feels very different than if the deck actually did go to the CEO and they decided to like purchase a company because of it or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, those are very different outcomes. And and your stress level will probably be different depending on which one would happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's by the way, for those listening, by deck we mean I think it's a consulting term. It's PowerPoint deck of PowerPoint slides.
Yeah.
And what's the other? Oh, a similar thing I heard about like big IT company, like big companies like Facebook and Google. Like, no offense to anybody, especially if somebody's from those companies listening. I totally admire the amount of work they put in and amount of effort and like the talent that works at those companies. But what I was going to say is that I've heard that the way like sometimes companies that of that magnitude that they can afford to attract talent by just throwing money at people, and so they can afford to pay like double or triple the average salary in that space, which is great. But then for Google, like around 80% of the projects that they work on, they actually never see the life of day, the light of day, because you know there's a lot of pilots, there's a lot of tests, there's a lot of ideas that they work on, and people are coding away, creating these or developing these tools and really cool things that might change the world, like, you know, Gmail, that never existed, you know, 15, 20 years ago. It didn't exist. That's a product of Google. That's one of those things that did see the light of day. But there's hundreds and thousands of other projects that they do that never see the light of day. And so the same problem, right? So you might be working away for a few years on a project, coding your life away like every day, and then it just never gets off the ground. Now, how would that feel? That wouldn't feel good, would it?
No, that wouldn't. I think there's something there though too with, it's like if you're starting a company, you know, if you, there's two parts to it. There's like, how good is the actual idea? But then there's like, how well did you implement it? And I think that there's some percentage of those ideas that like, just maybe weren't implemented well enough. Yeah. Maybe they didn't have the right project manager, or they didn't like have the right like team working together. So I think it's also important to remember like, a lot of ideas like at company like might turn into nothing, but it could be a result of you also just like deciding it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
And but you're absolutely right. Like there's many different courses of action that like your time and effort goes into that doesn't do anything.
Yeah. And to your point about ideas is there's so many ideas around the world, and lots of people actually have these ideas, and that's fantastic. But an idea is nothing without implementation. If you have an idea, that's cool. Like, you know, somebody might have had the idea, like for electricity, right? But if they hadn't gone through the efforts of researching and understanding and making it happen, we wouldn't have electricity now. So same thing, like with ideas, you always need a person with an idea and a person who's able to execute. If you put those two together, then you get a successful company. Or if one person has both inside them, which is very rare. But I got a feeling that there's a lot of people with ideas, but not enough people who can just sit down and execute that job. So there's space for both. Like for those listening out there, just decide for yourself, who are you? Are you a person with ideas, which is good, and it's very trendy and fashionable to be, you know, the person who's coming up with ideas and creating new businesses and so on. But there's always a second part to it. Every business that's successful out there, from Airbnb to Uber to all these other ones, to Microsoft, there's always somebody in there who's doing the execution, who's sitting down and who's putting in the hours, who can get things done. It's very important to also be a person like that, or have a person like that who can get things done. So if you're not a person with ideas, that's not a problem at all. Just be a person who can get things done, and you'll be as valuable as a person with ideas, if not more.
Yeah, exactly. To that is like when I decided to first study finance, I always had it in my mind that like the whole reason I'm studying business and getting into this field is because I'm not necessarily an idea guy, but I want to find an idea guy and like work with them. Like I wanted to learn the business side of it and like the finance side of it and be able to help somebody who doesn't have business acumen, like turn an idea into a business.
Yeah. Yep. And those skills are very valuable. Those, you know, like a person with an idea, and often you see this is often the case, like a person with idea might like have one idea. This is great when they have like lots of ideas, and then they know how to implement them, or they have the right partnership where somebody's implementing them and they move on to the next idea. But a lot of time, a person with idea will get so stuck on their one idea, and then if it doesn't lift, if it doesn't get off the ground, they will, you know, never move on to something new. They'll just really adamantly believe in that and never change their opinion. Whereas a person who can get things done, you know, they can work on one idea, they can work on another. It's a very transferable skill. You know, you go in, you're like, you know, a CEO or an operations officer or director or something. You get things done here, you get things done there. It's very transferable, and that's why it's also a very, very valuable skill to have. Something that's, you know, like you say, you want to find a person with an idea. I'm pretty sure if you keep going the way you're going, a person with an idea will find you, and many of them will find you, and you'll be like, oh, okay, which one do I want to work on now?
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to remain flexible. So like when I meet the right person at the right time, you know, I'm not in a position where we can't pursue that idea.
Yeah.
I would say everybody should always try and remain flexible, because you never know like what opportunity might pop up out of nowhere, like Uber did for me.
Yeah, exactly. Opportunities come. You got to grab them. What's a saying that luck is when opportunity meets preparation? Right? You got to be prepared, and the opportunity will come, and that's the definition of luck, according to some people. Well, that's a good segue. Thanks a lot, Josh, for coming on the show. How can our listeners and maybe those people with ideas contact you and find out how your career is going?
Yeah, absolutely. They could message me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way. Mm-hmm. I like you heard about me talking to the Uber recruiters. I'm very responsive. I love chatting to people on there about anything and everything, you know. That's probably the best way.
Gotcha. Well, and we've got one more question for you today. What's a book that you could recommend to our listeners so that they can better themselves?
Yeah, one book that comes back to what I was talking about earlier with statistics, you know, transferring statistic knowledge from like academic to practical. There's a publisher called O'Reilly that makes all these like technical books.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have one called Practical Statistics for Data Scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And it is does an incredible job of doing exactly what I like mentioned I have trouble with, and that's translating it to a practical environment.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it in a manner where they use R, and they show you the R code directly, and they have sample data sets. And I would highly recommend that book.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot. So that's Practical Statistics for Data Scientists by O'Reilly. Yeah. Thanks again, Josh. Great chat. Really love talking about the whole entrepreneurship and things like that. Thanks a lot for coming on the show, mate.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. And thanks for the Tableau conference as well.
No worries. Enjoy that. See ya.
All right. See ya, Carol.
So there you have it. That was Regional Operations Manager at Uber, Josh Kennedy, and also the winner of our Super Data Science giveaway. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Very interesting. Unfortunately, we couldn't go into a lot of technical stuff because, you know, working for a company like Uber, there's a lot of sensitive information, and Josh had to be very careful about what he can say and can't say, and we obviously respect that. But at the same time, we had some interesting conversations, especially around the space of entrepreneurship and ideas. And my personal favorite part was probably the whole philosophy that Josh has, that even though he's already at Uber and he's already got like a very interesting, exciting role, he doesn't want to stop there. He wants to keep growing. He wants to keep growing within the company, within Uber. He wants to become a data scientist, and he's doing lots of things towards that aspiration. And like, for example, waking up at 6 a.m. every day to study some things before he goes to work. That's you've got to have a lot of drive and motivation to do that. And that's very inspiring when you look at that. And a lot of the time people say that, you know, like, I don't have the time, I don't know when to fit it in, I don't know, like, you know, I'm very tired, when I come back. Well, there's always some time to find. There's a saying that nobody is short for time, it's just a matter of priority. If you're not getting something into your day, that means just, not just because you don't have enough time, but that means it's not a priority in your life. And that can be fair enough in lots of cases, but if you really, really want something, then you should make it a priority. Like, for instance, Josh really wants to become a data scientist. Made it a priority, and he's working towards that, which is very, very admirable. So there you go. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and you can find the show notes and the link to connect with Josh on his LinkedIn at www.superdatascience.com/95. Very getting very close to episode number 100. There as well, at that link, you can find the book that Josh recommended, as well as the transcript for this episode. And I look forward to seeing you here next time. Until then, happy analyzing.